The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.
The island, it is silent now, but the ghosts still haunt the waves. And a torch lights up a famished man who fortune could not save. Did you work upon the railroads? Did you rid the streets of crime? Were your dollars from the White House? Were they from the five and dime? Did the old songs start to cheer you? And did they still make you cry? Did you count the months and years? Or did your teardrops quickly dry? I know the things was not to be on a coffin ship. I came here and I never even got so far that they could change my name. Thousands are sailing across the western ocean to a land of opportunity that some of them will never see. Fortune prevailing across the western ocean, their bellies full, their spirits free. They'll break the chains.
Pogues there with the Philip Chevron song Thousands Are Sailing. In 2012, Philip Chevron, lead guitarist with the Pogues and founding member of Radiators from Space, had been given the all clear after 5 years battling cancer. However, 4 months later, he was told that the cancer had returned and that it was inoperable. His friends and collaborators have come together to produce a musical testimonial in the great tradition of football testimonials. And that event is happening this Saturday night at the Olympia Theatre in Dublin, featuring a whole list of people. The Horselips, Gavin Friday, Shane McGowan, an intriguing duo of Duke Special and award-winning actress Fiona Shaw, and of course a performance from the Radiators from Space. Joining us in studio are Radiators from Space members Steve Averill and Pete Holliday, and in London is ex-Pogue and ex-Radiator Cotch O'Riordan. You're all very welcome, folks.
Thank you, Catherine.
So, Pete, starting with you, I mean, whose idea was it to have a football-style testimonial?
Well, actually, Phillips, I think. It was Phillips. It's funny enough because, you know, when we first met Philip, you know, the whole notion of football, like, I remember him saying, like, you know, what's the point in going to see 22 grown men kicking around a pig's bladder full of air, you know? It's like, he wasn't really into football at all.
So but he won't be into my next item, which is all about Premier transfers.
Funny enough, then he converted. Yeah, you know, he. I think one of the members of the Pogues was a big fan of Nottingham Forest, and he brought him to a game, and he became converted. So he's a real football fan now. So it's actually Philip that came up with the idea of the testimonial.
Fantastic. I mean, there's a whole list of people that we'll get through a bit later on. But first of all, Steve, how is he? You know, is he listening in this morning?
Well, I hope he is. I mean, his health is obviously deteriorating and it's very difficult for him. And he spends a lot of time resting up to do it. So, you know, we hope that he'll make the concert on Saturday night as well.
Okay. I'm very aware that it's a sort of a sensitive issue for all of you to be talking about. When did you last see him?
I saw him about in person 2 months ago. Okay. When he sort of told me that the situation was terminal. And he talked to me about the concert and wanted us to get together to organise it. And he sent out sort of feelers to various people he'd like to be at it, and pretty well everybody that he asked has agreed to do it.
Okay.
It's a very bittersweet moment for us because, you know, we had hoped this summer to go into studio and do another album with him. But we're just doing the best we can to make this a great night.
Okay, and communication is pretty much by email
now. By email, yeah. At the moment, he's not unable to talk, so he's not able to do, you know, anything on the phone or anything like that. So, yeah, more or less every day we send emails back and forth.
Okay. Cotch, you're going to be coming over as well. What do you remember of your first meeting with Philip?
It was a big day. The Moving Hearts were had come over to London. They were playing a very famous venue called the Half Moon in Putney, which was, you know, it was too small for them. So there was a huge vibe and excitement around them. And of course, Christy was singing Faithful Departed, that Radiators classic song that Philip wrote. And I was in the Pogues at the time, and we had a works outing. We were going to go and see Moving Hearts, and Philip was a friend of the band at that stage. And so we all went together, and I just remember the combination of hanging out with Philip Chevron from the Radiators and Christy Moore from the Pogues. It was a really heady time. It was a good night.
And you knew of him. I mean, when you were in London, you at quite an early age knew of his material.
I did, yeah. I was the classic homeless teenager in London, and I ended up in a hostel in Kilburn, and the library in Kilburn was very well stocked. If you were London Irish, it was packed, any Brendan Behan book you wanted. But the music section was interesting as well, and in among the Christie and the Wolf Tones and, you know, all the folky albums, they had Ghost Town. So I took that out, and that's a very great cover. Anyone who wants to see a cool album cover, look at the cover of Ghost Town. It was very intriguing. So I took that out of the library, and it was one of those, you'd listen to it once through and then go straight back to track one, side one, and listen to it again, because it was as good as reading a book or watching a film. Mm. Amazing cinematic imagery, and just the power of it really struck me, and the stories in it. So I was a huge fan before I ever met him.
Mm. Pete and Steve, Pete, go to you first. Your first memory of meeting Philip.
We were talking about this on the way in, where we had put an ad looking for, you know, we were trying to get a band together, and we had like a series of.
Was there just the two of you now at this stage?
Yeah, at that particular stage. Yeah. So we put an ad out, and I think there was and then the stream of, you know, no hopers, and then Steve reminded me that we heard the familiar sound of a two-stroke engine coming up in a little Honda 50, and the knock on the door, and this skinny young kid with a big crash helmet and a big silver tooth sort of came in. That was completely wired, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and it was kind of like, and we sort of sat down and sort of listened to what we were looking for, a lead guitar player at the time, because our previous lead guitar, Billy, had left the band. So he came in and, you know, we played us a song and we talked, and Pete and I both felt he was auditioning us as much as we were auditioning him. And but we kind of turned him down initially because it seemed to us that, you know, he was a rhythm guitar player and a songwriter, same as what Pete was, and we were looking for a lead guitar player. But about a week later, I said, this is crazy, because, you know, he knew exactly the kind of direction we were going in. He'd seen the Sex Pistols in London. You know, he was perfect for what we did. So I rang him up and said, would you take on the role of lead guitar and come in? And he did. And he said, yeah, I'd love to do that. And he joined. And from then on, we put together, which is quite ironic, because now the roles have switched and Pete became the lead guitar player and the whole thing.
So all of that for nothing, Philip.
But no, it was great. It was one of those magic combinations.
What was it that he had? You know, apart from the suave and the swagger and the tooth.
See, it's something that you can't discernibly describe him. It's just a feeling, you know. You could see it in his eyes, you know, and you could hear, you know, you can hear it, his enthusiasm. And, yeah. You know, he was just tuned in.
Yeah. There's an intuition about it. I mean, when I started the idea of the band, I worked in a record shop, and I used to sort of watch people come in and see what records they choose in the rack. And if they looked right, I'd ask them, did they want to join a band? And that's what happened to Pete.
That's how you found me. Yeah.
He came in and he bought a record, and the counter, I said, do you want to join a band? And I had no idea what he could play or anything. That's immaterial. I just wanted the people to do it. And both Pete and Billy came through that connection.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. Well, Shane McGowan wanted to share his memories of Philip with us. So last night we recorded some of his thoughts, and this is his recollection of their first encounter.
Well, first met Phil in the 70s in London, yeah? At the Stoke Newington Pegasus in 77, which was a regular music joint, and it was a great Irish bar in Stoke Newington, yeah? But he wrote great original stuff, like, you know what I mean? Like Faithful Departed, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Or Ballad of the Faithful Departed, to give it its full name, yeah? Which Christy Moore covered and lots of people covered, yeah? We were all at the first U2 gig in England, which was at the Hope and Anchor, which was disastrous and bad, yeah. It's really embarrassing, like. And so he never wore the same thing twice. in a day, and later on he changed 3 times a day. Yeah? But he wore really good shoes, really arcane shoes, perfectly fitting suits, you know, like, you know, still does to this day, yeah.
Oh, I love it. He still has it. And we want to say a big thanks to Victoria Mary Clark, who recorded that. She actually recorded, I think, about 45 minutes of it.
Yeah, we heard,
yeah. So talk to us about the early days of the Radiators, because, I mean, there was big success.
Well, it was hugely exciting for, you know, for everybody, because there was a change in the air in Ireland, you know, even though the punk scene had happened. In Ireland, it was like the music scene was beginning to sort of move towards that. But then, of course, you had things like RT itself, for example, you know, acknowledged the fact that the pirate radio were drawing in this new young audience. So in order to counteract that, they created the second channel, you know, like 2FM, and they got Ian Wilson and Dave Fanning in from college. Then you had the hot press started. So all of the, you know, the whole generation suddenly took control of the music industry and sort of kicked it forward. Yeah, so it was incredibly exciting. Yeah, it was a big adventure for us, you know, and there was a lot of resistance in places, but slowly but surely, we created our own scene.
Yeah, we were told on occasion to go away and learn to play before we came back again. So it was kind of an interesting thing of doing it. I mean, Pete and I had worked together for quite a while before we got the lineup together for what became the Radio Space. But it was like we were trying to make our own. We weren't hearing the music that we wanted to listen to, so we decided to go out and do it ourselves.
Things happened quick in those days. I mean, we actually, you know, we had an offer of a record deal before we'd even played a gig. You know, through a demo that was recorded, Eamon Carr and Jackie Hayden put some money up for us to record some demos. And they brought it to...
That must have been pretty unheard of at the time.
They brought it to London and they said, well, the recordings are okay, but we really like the packaging. You know, we really like the logo. So there's obviously something there, because Steve, obviously, as you know, does the graphic design. He came up with our sort of famous sort of zigzaggy logo. So we had an offer to make a record before we'd even sort of played a gig. You know, so things happened sort of fairly quickly from then, you know.
All right, well, let's remind ourselves what the Radiators sounded like.
There is a man in a shiny suit. He's saying, get them off the streets and into the schools. But he knows what he does. He's got a middle-aged spread, and he could never understand what's going on in my head. I'm gonna get him tonight. I'll teach him a lesson, all right. I'm gonna suck my telecaster to the television screen, 'cause I don't like what's going down. I'm gonna suck my telecaster to the television screen, 'cause I don't like what's going down. I got the right, I got the right, I got the ticket and the bus stops here. Continuation on the network news, rock and roll heroes with the rich man blues. It doesn't really matter if the future looks bleak, 'cause I've never seen more than a tenner a week. California records, so I see them when I can. I travel like it's all there, where they are there. I'm gonna tell it, touch it, through the television screen, 'cause I don't like what's going down. I'm gonna touch it, tell it, touch it, through the television screen, 'cause I don't like what's going down. I got the right, I got the right, I got the ticket and the buck stops here.
Great sound, great sound. So
that was the debut single. That was our calling card, our manifesto. 1 minute 52 seconds of pure magic.
It was actually the first punk single to go top 20 anywhere in the world.
Unbelievable.
That's great. That's a great sound.
It's a great sound.
So it's weird. No, it's funny enough, because it was a solo on that, on the actual recording. It's sort of a Philip thing as well, where he'd done the solo in rehearsal and he'd done the solo, you know, at gigs and stuff like that, but it was nothing like the solo that was actually on the record. And I actually remember the moment where he went in to do the solo and he just came out with this, it could have been like Jimi Hendrix or somebody. We just, you know, the whole studio was just there with our jaws open.
Yeah.
And it's just like
a
one-off moment that was captured forever on that recording. It was
unbelievable.
Brilliant.
Oh, unbelievable talent. Just even listening to that punk music there, that clip, I mean, I've always been intrigued how were punk musicians treated very differently from the 70s right the way through. I mean, when it started to become cool and the whole scene started to become cool, and the shift in attitude must have been quite amazing for you guys.
Well, it was, because we'd obviously been going before the movement that was punk was called punk. I mean, the name, The Radio from Space, is a kind of B-movie trash aesthetic kind of thing. And we just loved people like the New York Dolls and those kind of bands. And that's what we were trying to sort of do. And then the punk movement came on. And it was kind of really weird because we were in our garage in Port Marnock playing away. And suddenly you started to read about these bands in London and New York. Mm. And we all had this common pool of music we were drawing from. So you suddenly felt the synergy of this movement. But I think that the people who were involved in the early stages of it, The Clash and we all sort of grew very, very quickly because the time between our first album, which is kind of what people consider hardcore punk, to Ghost Town, the development musically is huge within that short space of time because we had so many influences. Yeah. I mean, Philip has a huge influence in theatre and musical theatre. It was a very much thing. And he also, from the very first time we met him, we knew his lyrical skills, which I think are underestimated. I think he's one of the best writers that's ever come out of Ireland. His lyrical skills are amazing. I mean, straight first song we ever played us, we knew immediately this guy can really write songs. And it was such a pleasure to, and always has been, to work and to listen to what the songs he's done.
Mm-hmm. What was your last shot at big time international success?
Time international success. Let me think now. So long ago. Well, funny enough, it's almost like fate, you know. I think most good bands have an agenda, okay? And I mean, our agenda was never to be the biggest band in the world. That's just a byproduct. Our agenda was always just to make the great records. The closest we ever came was the album we keep referring to, Ghost Town, which was produced by a fellow called Tony Visconti, who had produced David Bowie and T-Rex and most of our record collection. So we had this wonderful opportunity to work with him. And we recorded two songs with him, Million Dollar Hero and Walking Home Alone Again. Million Dollar Hero was released as a single, and it got immediately onto the BBC playlist. And it was every time you turned the radio on, it was getting played and played and played. And it was released, and in England they used to have the top 75 in every retail store, but then underneath that would have Bubbling Under, you know, About to Break, and that's where we were. Mm. So we were in the BBC doing a session, and when we were in there, we actually got a phone call that came across from the Top of the Pops office and said, you know, if you're in the top 75 next week, you're on Top of the Pops, which was unheard of, because you'd have to be in the top 40, but they liked it so much. Of course, get the violins out now. Unfortunately, our record company were changing distribution that very week, so they couldn't get the stock into the shop, so it didn't get into the top 75. So it was just so that close. It was that close, because I'm positive. That if it had gone into the top 75, and if we had appeared on Top of the Pops, you two would have been supporting us in Crow Park back in 2004.
Well, listen, I mean, I could talk to you all day, and especially about that. I mean, how you guys feel about that looking back now.
From the beginning, we had like five solid years. We released records all over the world. We sold reasonable amounts of records. We always sold enough, we always just wanted to sell enough records where we could make another one after.
Mm. And I've always read that about you guys, and especially Philip saying that as well. It was always about the music. And I want to ask you, Philip's contribution to the music scene over the last 35 years. I mean, what's his legacy?
Great songs. Mm. I mean, if you look at any of the stuff, Philip has written a musical called Jack Rooney, which hasn't yet seen the light of day, but he wrote several songs for a complete piece of music for that. I mean, any of the Ghost Town songs, and even current songs. I mean, and he and I worked with Pete on choosing the songs for our last album, which was a covers album of 60s and 70s Irish beat groups and people from them. Just the understanding of the music, and that's really what his legacy should be. People should listen to the great songs he's written.
If you hear any of his songs, what you hear is first of all, great skills, great knowledge, and great integrity, you know, in all of his music, you know, and not just his music, him as a person as well. I think he's the most honest, trustworthy person with great integrity that I've ever known, you know.
He's still able to write and he's still able to play. Is he
absolutely
still making music?
Not at this point, because he's just trying to, you know, come to terms with it.
But he's
there's always things in his head. He's always trying to put things down, and that's probably the frustrating thing for him, trying to realise the things that he has that he wants to bring out.
Mm-hmm. We're still actually batting around ideas by email as well, which is great, you know.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah, great to hear that. What sort of palliative care is he receiving?
Well, he's under hospice care at the moment, so you know, he's sort of dealing with that way. And I think it, with all cancers, there's a sort of a level where your energy levels just get very difficult to deal with, mm-hmm. and that's probably the hardest thing that he has to deal with at the moment. Just having the energy to carry on, do the things he wants to do.
Mm-hmm. And you're hoping, you said earlier, that he's, fingers crossed, he might get to the gig on Saturday night.
We'd really love to see him.
All right, well, as I said, it's a huge lineup. There's Horselips, Gavin Friday, Shane McGowan, Duke Special, the Philip Chevron testimonial is taking place on
Subject
Saturday.
To confirmation, I think you'd be able to hear the whole thing on 2XM Digital's channel.
Oh, fantastic. Yes. Okay. Well, it's Saturday 24th of August. I think there is few tickets left. Doors open at 7:30. As I said, it sounds like it's going to be a great night. Yeah, very special night for you guys.
It's going
to
kick off right on time at 8, because there's so many people on the bill, we want to get through everybody.
I know. I mean, the list is as long as your arm. Listen, have a great night, and thanks a million for talking to us.
Thanks a million.
Okay. Text 51551. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.